6 to 6. Talk Radio 760 KFMB. San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB Studios in beautiful Kearny Mesa on this gloomy Sunday night with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up to Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now it's time for me to introduce my illustrious co-host, the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a family office expert advising six high-net-worth families and possibly more. He's a marathon runner and enthusiast. He's an all-around family man and good guy. He's a philanthropist, and his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am great. It's nice that it's no longer roasting outside, but had to use the windshield wipers instead.
It's one extreme or the other, I guess, in San Diego. Hey, Richard, have you seen this play Allegiance yet?
And I'm not going to have time. I guess it's at the old Globe through maybe Thursday or Friday.
No, it closes next Sunday.
Oh, Sunday, good.
It's a wonderful show. George Takei is in it, and it's been having a wonderful run. It's going to head to Broadway. And I'm planning to see it this week. But anybody who has not seen it, try to get out to see this show. It's going to be on Broadway. We're going to have the producer, Wendy Gillespie, on in probably January sometime. And highly, highly recommended. So, and then one other thing I did want to mention, that High Tech High is having an election, a voter information night down there on Liberty Station. You ever been over there, Richard?
Beautiful place.
Yeah, High Tech High is an incredible place. Anyway, that will be October 30th from 6 to 8 p.m. And I'm sure if you go on their website, hightechhigh.org, you'll find out more about it. But a lot of candidates will be there. A lot of students are expecting 300 or more people, and I recommend that. But anyway, what do you think of the baseball, Richard?
Game 7 tomorrow night. Boy, talk about TV choices. Monday Night Football, Game 7 of the National League Championship Series, and the debate all on at the same time.
We'll have to triple screen it somehow.
Well, we can come in here. There's three screens right in front of me.
But we shouldn't waste too much time because we have a very important guest, right?
We do. That would be congressional candidate Scott Peters.
Wait.
No, I'm going to tell who it is.
No. I got to build it up.
No, we don't. It's been on the website all week. Everybody knows.
I know. But look, he's been...
Everybody knows.
He's been a city council member, city council president, two terms, I believe, which is the most you can do. He's now sits on the Port Commission of San Diego. And now it is my pleasure and honor to introduce Scott Peters. Scott, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. And we also have tonight another VIP. This will be Richard's daughter, Demi. And she would like to ask you the first question. So, Demi, what do you have for Scott?
So I understand that you were a key person in getting my school off the ground. I was wondering what your motivation was behind that.
Demi goes to Canyon Crest, in case the listeners don't know that already.
And where is that, Canyon Crest?
It's up in Del Sur.
Okay, Del Sur.
Yeah, it's at the end of Delmar Heights Road, where the road ends.
So, how did you figure in on all of that?
Well, I had the great honor of representing Carmel Valley on the city council. And a lot of the infrastructure is new there. You don't hear a lot of complaints out of Carmel Valley, but we did hear that Torrey Pines High School was getting really overcrowded.
Hmm.
And I think they had 3,500 kids at one point. It was really putting taxing the infrastructure and the capacity and the teachers. And things started to slow down in getting that second high school, which was Canyon Crest. So I took a little hand to get all the infrastructure going from the city side, put everyone in a room. I made sure we made some commitments to deadlines and actually got it started, even though I think the first class, Demi, started in trailers.
Wow.
Yeah, but
What year was that, Scott?
Oh, man. I'm guessing.
Well, see, my son was in the second graduating class, so that would be
04. Yeah, something like that.
So it's a pretty new school, huh?
Yeah, it's a beautiful school. The Ravens. Wow. Ravens. I was invited back to help them open it up, and it was a great school, great school.
And they specialize in performing arts, is that?
Theater arts.
Outstanding.
And Demi, how many games has the football team lost in their history?
Oh, zero. None.
They don't have one.
Yeah, been defeated since 2004, guys.
Well, that's good. There's less injuries and more focus on fun and academics.
Yeah, well, fewer concussions that way.
Yes, let's hope so. But anyway, Scott.
Thanks, Demi.
You're embroiled in a congressional battle here. What made you decide to run for Congress in the first place?
Well, I'm really grateful to be have been able to grow up in America and owe a lot to it. And I just saw last summer, I saw this fight over the debt ceiling, which was a fight over whether America would pay its bills. We got our credit downgraded for the first time in our nation's history. So all the borrowing that Congress does is that much more expensive. And now we're facing this fiscal cliff, this sequestration thing, which is these indiscriminate across-the-board cuts.
Mm-hmm.
An average of $3,500 tax increase on an average family in San Diego. It's going to put us back in a recession. Threatens 30,000 jobs just in the defense industry and just in our county. That's just not working together to get stuff done. And that's been my trademark in my approach working in government since I got started.
And that's if they let these tax cuts expire or not?
Yes. But. I mean, in other words, I think there's a consensus in Washington that we don't want to raise taxes on the middle class. But this would let all the tax cuts expire. And I think clearly we're going to have to take some bold action to deal with the budget deficit in Congress. But this kind of indiscriminate across-the-board cut is not the right way to do it. And I don't think it should be hyped as a success that my opponent, Mr. Bilbray, seems to think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, the tax rates change on January 1, 2013, compared to what they are on December 31, 2012, unless Congress does something about it, either soon or retroactively.
Gotcha. Right. Gotcha.
Grotesque uncertainty, in other words.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I went on the Chamber of Commerce trip, which I have done just about every year since I was a city council member and as a port commissioner. It was part of our business delegation. We met with the Undersecretary of the Navy, and here's a guy with great responsibility for our nation's defense. He doesn't know kind of whether he has to start issuing stop work orders on construction projects or layoff notices to civilians because Congress can't get his act together. And I just think we should do better.
Yeah. Now, we usually like to get into, you know, your little bio of your history and born and raised, schooled where, et cetera. So where were you born and raised in that?
I was born in Springfield, Ohio, but moved right away to the suburbs of Detroit. My dad is a minister. He's retired now. He's a Lutheran minister. He had a church there. While he was there, he got involved in fighting desegregation. It was the case in a lot of major cities in the suburbs that in some neighborhoods, if you were Jewish or African American, they wouldn't let you buy a house. And that was the case in our neighborhood. And
It was a case in La Jolla up
until 16. And my dad fought against that and took some personal grief for that, but set a good example for standing up for what's right.
That'd be in the 60s, I guess?
The end of the 60s. In fact, he became friends with Martin Luther King Sr. After his son had been assassinated, and he came to speak at our church in an all-white suburb of Detroit. So that was kind of cool.
Wow.
And then he moved around a little bit. I went to high school in New Jersey, went to college at Duke in North Carolina.
But what do you do when they play basketball?
Watch.
I was going to say.
Close attention. By the way, the football team is 6-2 and bowl eligible. So
there you go.
Actually, I never thought I'd tell you that. I much more enjoyed the Duke football game than the Chargers football game.
Yeah.
That was true this week. And then,
Law school at?
And New York University.
New York, okay.
Then got a job at a big law firm in the Midwest in the private sector. Worked on tax law when I first started. And then switched to environmental law and did that for the rest of my career, 15 years as a lawyer.
And then tell us about your EPA, because you worked the year in Washington.
Between college and law school, I took a job as an economist for the Environmental Protection Agency, which was a great cocktail party title, but it paid about $15,000. I lived in a group house, paid $110 a month rent, rode my bike and took the bus everywhere. But it was a great experience. I decided then that I wasn't going to go become a academic and economics. I liked what the lawyers were doing. That's when I decided to go to law school.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you find your way back to San Diego?
Well, I was when I was practicing in that law firm, I just hoped to become a partner and maybe get involved in politics as a volunteer. I had met my wife and gotten married. She came to Minneapolis and she came home one day and she said, you know, I got this job opportunity that I really think we should take. And she told me about it, how much it made, and was what she wanted to do. She would be a vice president of a manufacturing company. And she said, there's one catch. I said, what's that? She says, well, it's in Rancho Bernardo, California. And I said, Rancho Bernardo, California? She says, no, it's San Diego. We should check it out. So we came out here, and we really couldn't turn it down. Well, it was a great opportunity for her.
From Minnesota to here, my gosh, huh?
Oh, yeah. And I didn't know anything about San Diego, but, of course, we've never looked back. We went to the Rose Bowl on January 1st. 1989, and then drove down here to meet the moving van a couple days later, and kids are natives, and we love it. Can't imagine living anywhere else now.
Yeah. So, and then when you got to San Diego, you started practicing law here, and she had her job at the manufacturing company.
Yeah, and I would practice at another big firm called Baker McKenzie, which back then was the largest firm in the world, I think.
Oh, I've heard of them.
And I noticed that I had was being billed out at a really high rate as a trial lawyer, but I wasn't getting many trials. So I took a job as the county's environmental lawyer, and a little bit of a pay cut, but I thought I would get some great experience. And when I was there, the funny thing is one of my clients right off the bat was Supervisor Brian Bilbray. But when I was there, I just thought, you know, these people are doing really interesting things, and I thought maybe I would pursue that. I knew that my city council seat was coming up, was going to be vacated by term limits in 2000. So I actually opened my own firm and my own environmental law firm for 4 years and evaluated whether to run for Congress. I did some client work, which was really interesting, but, you know, running my own small business. And I did some community work and ultimately ran for council in 2000. I was elected, the first Democrat elected to District 1, which is La Jolla.
Who held the seat before you?
Harry Mathis, friend of mine, really good guy, super guy. He's now the chair of Metropolitan Transit Board, University City resident.
So what year was that for your first term then?
2000.
2000.
Yeah. And Harry took really good care of me, and we've become good friends since he realized I wasn't crazy.
Well, that's great. So, now you're in the throes of a congressional battle, and what would be your priorities when if you get elected?
Well, I think, people know we're on an unsustainable fiscal path in Congress. We're borrowing 30 or 35 cents out of every dollar that we spend. We've got to get things right, and so we have to balance the budget, and we have to do it the right way. My opponent signed a pledge that I think is to a lobbyist named Grover Norquist. Never to raise tax on anybody, millionaires, billionaires, oil companies, or anybody. So I think that makes it really difficult to compromise on a budget solution. I think we clearly have to agree to make cuts as well. We have to cut things that are programs that are redundant or excess, and we have to figure out how to save the safety net. We have to save Medicare and Social Security because those are things that people have paid into.
But you've spoken out against subsidies to oil companies, right? Because I want to talk about that when we come back.
We'll come back. Okay. We got to take a break right now. I'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. Stay tuned. All right. We are back with It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Muscio, myself, and Scott Peters running for Congress here. And we had someone call in. We normally don't take calls on this show, but a young student called in from Rancho Bernardo, and he had a question about libraries. And Scott wanted to address, it's really a city issue, but Scott wanted to make a mention of that when we came back. So, Scott, what do you say?
I love libraries. Actually, yesterday I went to the 20th anniversary of the Peñasquitos Branch Library, which I had the pleasure to represent. My wife and I have made a big commitment. I was the president of the Friends of the Library in La Jolla. Today, I get a city pension that I donate back to city libraries so that they can continue to provide the services they do to our communities.
That's really something.
So speaking of donations, before we went to break, I was asking you about oil company subsidies, which are like donations from the government to the richest companies on earth.
Well, I looked it up, and we give research for scientific money. We give tax breaks. It's remarkable when, of course, they've never been more profitable. It seems like that would be an expenditure if we were looking for one to cut back on that we could make.
Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, we're going to have tax increases somewhere, and to me, the tax increases should be allocated to the people or the businesses that are most profitable because they have the most capacity to pay.
Did you hear Mark?
But that's common sense. Yeah. I don't know.
Did you hear Mark Cuban yesterday on CNN? He says, you know what we should all strive to do? Everyone gets stinking rich so we could pay these huge taxes so we can take care of our services. I mean, I thought that was great for him to step up and say something like
that. That's the same thing that Irwin Jacobs and Warren Buffett have said. I mean, I think there are a lot of people that feel that way.
Yeah. And I'm surprised Cuban said that because he's in a real bad mood because Dirk Nowitzki had to have surgery and he's out for 2 months.
But speaking of oil, when they asked the president and Governor Romney, you know, do you think it's the government's job to keep oil prices down? I mean, how do you dictate to these oil monoliths? And I honestly don't. I think the true answer is they really can't because I think oil companies are holding all the cards or the aces. And isn't that a more honest approach? I mean, we could try, but what do you guys think?
Joe, I don't want to answer
I have heard that there's a lot of speculation in the price, in the market
in
for
the
oil.
Futures
that,
market.
That might be, you might look at that, but mm-hmm. I think ultimately, you know, I always think back when I was a kid, I remember my dad pulling, I was in the backseat of the station wagon. My dad pulls in to a gas station and pulls right out and he says, "There's no way I'm paying 44 cents a gallon of gas." Right? And so since that time, whether you've had the whatever party that has held the Congress or the presidency, the price has only gone one direction, and it really points out the way that we need to diversify out of that kind of fossil fuel.
Well, that's true. I mean, obviously, the supply is not going to last forever, and Boone Pickens made a point yesterday, too, on CNN that he said, we have more natural gas, if you want equivalency of oil to gas with the Middle East. He said, we actually have more in the United States than they do in the Middle East, so we should really just pull out of the Middle East with militarily, et cetera, as best we can, and focus on our domestic production, and maybe that's something you could look at. You know,
it definitely is an opportunity. You know, I think just 2 years ago, the conversation has changed from just a couple of years ago, because natural gas is plentiful, it's domestic, it burns cleaner than petroleum and coal, mm-hmm. and it's still a fossil fuel, but mm-hmm. it would be a nice bridge to getting to solar and to
wind
and geothermal.
And Richard, your UBS people even say that, right? How much?
Oh yeah, UBS, one of our sponsors. We had a great speaker that we haven't had on the show yet, but we're going to, named Ron Barone, speak about that recently.
Yeah, at the Estancia up here.
Yeah, it was a great presentation.
He said we can get energy independent if we really get off our
dust. If we really wanted to.
And get off our dust and do
so, something. Scott, let me ask you a question that's somewhat related to things that the government subsidizes or doesn't. I know you're fairly big on, research and development. You know, we had the research credit for income tax purposes sort of go by the wayside about a year ago, and it's my opinion that the country's sort of falling behind some other countries with regard to research activities. Where do you stand on trying to improve, things that this country does to innovate?
Well, I think it's really important. When I give a speech, I talk about three things that I think the government needs to invest in for us to be competitive in the next century. One is just keeping our infrastructure going. Two is education, because we can't compete in a brain-powered global economy unless the kids who can go to college are getting to college. But the third thing is scientific research. We know that the government has played a role in funding basic scientific research, which has often led to great discoveries that have transformed our lives or cured diseases.
And we've seen that here in San Diego.
Right. And San Diego's been extremely important. If you just take out your cell phone, there's one basic scientific idea that turned into a great economic job generator. Mm-hmm. But I went to visit the Salk Institute and spoke to a number of scientists there, and they're really worried because as we cut our country's commitment to scientific research from the NIH, for instance, which we're going to continue to do unless we balance the budget, kids who are looking at where to do science are thinking, is the United States really a place where we can do this? It takes until you're 40 years old to get that lab, to be able to seek that grant, to do the experiment, to make that discovery, to create that product. It's a lot of time and a lot of investment. And we were funding about 20% of the grants. Now it's down to about 7% of the grants. It's very competitive. And kids are thinking, I could do this science in Brazil or China or India or Europe, where they're making these investments, and have a much better shot at actually getting the money I need to do my science. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be in the United States. So we have to make that commitment. We can't lose that advantage, which has been so critical to making us the leading economic power in the world.
How are we doing in biotech here, though? I mean, we hear that we're pretty good. Have we been falling back a little bit, though, with the challenged economy and the budgets? Or
I wouldn't be able to tell you how we fall. I know that there's a continuing frustration in the biotech community about the availability of capital.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've done really well. I think I would say one thing where I actually agree with the Republicans on is we're punishing these medical device companies with a medical device tax. Mm-hmm. I don't know another industry that has to bear the brunt of. We would never think of an auto industry tax directed at the auto industry. Here this is an industry where we lead the world, like we did in solar, and we seem to be driving it out by taxing it. I think there's other ways to fund what we need to fund than to pick mm-hmm. on this industry, which is going to be so important to San Diego and the United States.
Anyway, we have a break coming up already? All right, well, we'll be right back after news, sports, weather announcements with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. Please stay tuned. We are back with the last half of It's Your Money and Your Life. Over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
Big thanks to UBS. We've got UBS guests coming on the next two Sundays, including Michael Ryan, who is head of Investment America's research, number one guy in the country. That's next Sunday. And then Thomas McLaughlin coming back for an encore performance.
First
Sunday of November, that would be.
Top-notch national analyst, right, Richard?
Absolutely. So thanks, UBS. Also, Carl Schuler and Business Valuations Limited. Our favorite CPAs, Don Epic and Paul Polito at Polito Epic Associates. Jason Kruger, Kruger and Signature Analytics, great CFO company. Joel Grushkin and Cost Segregation Initiatives. Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal. And, of course, our favorite bank on the planet, Sean Puckett's. And Steve Sefton with Regions Bank. So thanks to everybody. We couldn't do it without you.
And you can find all of them on our website at iymoney.com. Look for the sponsors button. They're all there. Their emails, phone numbers, everything.
Plus a lot of other great stuff at that website.
True.
Constantly adding to it.
True.
And thanks to Courtney for taking care of it.
Absolutely.
So, Scott, we were talking about infrastructure earlier in the show, and I guess one of my frank concerns is that the U.S. only invests about 2.5% of its GDP in infrastructure. Compared to other countries, that's woefully low. I know China's 3 to 4 times higher than we are. Any comments?
Well, I think you're right. It's going to be impossible for us to compete if our bridges are falling down and we're not investing in those kinds of things. At the port, we're really concerned about making sure that we're connected to the national system of rail and roads. That helps our business and helps San Diego create jobs. There's another piece of infrastructure. It's funny because the Chamber of Commerce trip we took in September, one of the things we tried to talk to everybody about was the border crossing. I don't know if you know that an average 45-minute delay at the border crossing cost the California...
Well, that's a good day, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I would say, but if it's 45 minutes, that costs, over the course of a year, that costs the California economy $3.5 billion. And at San Ysidro, our average has been closer to 2 hours, sometimes 4 hours. So we're losing a lot of money. What have we done? Well, Mexico has gone ahead and they've built their new border crossing, which is going to enable them to check and scan people effectively, but a lot more quickly. And we haven't even started ours. That's where our congressional delegation is. We haven't even started. So you've got a border crossing that ends in one place in Mexico, and then way over to the side is the old border crossing that where ours ends. They're not even hooked up together. We haven't even started.
Isn't it funny? The weight is on the U.S. side. We've got the manana syndrome. How about that?
Yeah. And so
Joe.
But you know, we're not getting help from my opponent on that, who sees the border only as a threat and not as an economic opportunity.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think the solution to illegal immigration is deporting everybody who got here illegally, but that's a topic for another time.
Yeah. What are some significant differences between you and Brian, Bill Bray? I mean, obviously the financial thing, and then you have some of the other issues that, or some things you take issue with him about specifically?
Well, I think, you know, he's become just a real extremist, and he headlined the Tea Party rallies this year, mm-hmm. Reaffirming that he's not going to compromise. We really can't take that attitude to Washington and expect to get things done. We have to be willing to sit down around a table. And well, I disagree with him on a lot of the social issues on choice or reproductive freedom. And he's got a 9 rating from the Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Mine's 100.
Not a big fan of women's rights, is he?
He's on the environment. He's become really very, very stridently anti-environment on clean water and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sitting around and figuring out how to get the economy going, where it's going to take some give and take, and he's not going to be willing to give. He's pledged that to the Tea Party. I think that's the main problem. Hmm. You have a senior guy, 12 years experience, that's only 2 years less experience than Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see leadership out of him, and we've given him a big chance. He's come home and said that the sequestration is an example of bipartisan success working together. And I think he's successfully executed a punt, and he comes and tells us it's a touchdown. It's just not.
Well, interesting that, you know, like we talked at the break, you said redistricting, if we hadn't been able to do that in a more equitable way, you probably would not even have run in your district. There would have been no shot. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. The difference is that his old district had an 11-point registration advantage for Republicans. District is a third Republican, a third Democrat, a third Independent.
Mm-hmm.
It matches me really well. I'm not the most partisan guy. You know, that frustrates some Democrats. I know you know, mm-hmm. Joe.
You've been endorsed by some pretty interesting people. Nathan Fletcher endorses you.
Nathan Fletcher, four former Chamber of Commerce chairs, who don't necessarily agree with every political position I take, but just want a Congress that works and a delegation that works better together. And they think between Brian and me, that I'm the better candidate for them.
Now, your Bill Walton show up. When was that? Yesterday?
Bill Walton came yesterday and sent off our walkers, our awesome San Diegan. I mean, can you imagine being one of the 50 best ever at something that you did? Uh-huh. He was cited as being one of the 50 best basketball players in history. You know, he had all those championships at UCLA, Portland Trail Blazers, and the Celtics.
Born and raised in San Diego.
Don't forget Helix High School.
Yeah, and but what you love about him is that he's taken his celebrity and really put it to work for other people. So he's in particular the Challenged Athletes Foundation, which we did today. Recognized today in La Jolla. He's been a big supporter of that and is a real inspirational guy.
Yeah. A lot of athletes don't take the time, but he does, you know, wear his heart on his sleeve, and, you know, our best to him. I hope he's listening tonight. So, hello, Bill. But speaking of environment, now, this UCSD, we talked at the break about this too. They are about 90% off the grid. They have the largest fuel cell of any college campus, I think, in the country, generating a ton of electricity. Is that something that we should perhaps look at too? If you get to Congress, maybe you could help get some more research dollars for that, or some more funds.
Well, again, you know, one of the main parts of the San Diego economy, in addition to the military, which is about 25% of our jobs, tourism, which is obviously very important, is innovation. I love the idea of innovating in energy with things like fuel cells. UCSD is one of the greenest campuses in the country because they've really taken the academics of energy conservation to heart. I think it's obviously has potential for creating some jobs as well as for saving energy. So it's certainly something worth pursuing.
Mm-hmm. By the way, their campus is hosting a Price Center Tuesday night. Just dawned on me at 6:30. Free food, too, for everybody. But they're going to have a whole panel of experts on food safety and this GMO issue about labeling and such. So you have an opinion on that, Scott, the GMO labeling? Or?
You know, in all honesty, I haven't looked at every single proposition. Generally, I think that labeling is good. I mean, I think one of the foundations of markets is that you understand kind of information.
Transparency.
So,
right?
You know, generally, I think that that's a good idea.
Excellent. Richard, do you have a question?
I want to talk about pensions. We have to get to pensions, don't we, Joe?
Sure.
Since we're a financial show.
Right.
So, Scott, I know you took some criticism on the pension mess here in San Diego because your first couple of years in office on the council, I guess you didn't really notice what was going on in terms of what a mess it was. And I don't know if that's justified criticism or not, but the point is the facts are the fact. But certainly the country, not to mention local municipalities, whether it's public or private, the pension system's a total and complete mess. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, substantial changes have to happen to make that, well, not be a mess. It's not just putting a Band-Aid on it.
Right.
Where do you stand on issues like preserving Social Security for people who've paid in money over all these years and now maybe are at risk for not collecting?
Well, let me just say about pensions. You know, San Diego is one of a number of cities and states who've had pension problems. We had three decades of bad habits, and when I first was elected, I took a vote to continue them for another year, and it was a mistake. My opponent calls me the father of the pension crisis, but I did hear the system actuary, the pension systems actuary, said if we could reverse that vote, which I would dearly love to do, it would cut about 3% off the pension deficit. So it's not, you know, it was a mistake, but, you know, there was a lot going into it. The important thing is that we decided as a council is that we were going to do something about it to fix it. So we took steps. We got outside auditors to come tell us, you know, what went wrong and how to fix it. We banned pension underfunding. So since 2004, it's been illegal to underfund the pension, while other pension systems aren't even making payments. We've banned that. So every year we pay the full mortgage bill. We made our employees. We sat down at the table and said, listen, you got to be in this with us. They took a 6% pay cut to pay a larger share of the cost of their benefits. The state of California just started doing that last month.
Mm-hmm.
We did that in 2004. And we've held the line on raises. So essentially almost every city employee hasn't gotten a raise since 2004, 2005. That'll have to continue for a few more years because we're still working on it. And then I negotiated a new pension system for new employees that saved about $23 million a year. The point is, at the end of our hard decade, Mayor Sanders said that I was a partner in meaningful pension reform, and the SEC itself said San Diego was a model for other cities to follow. It wasn't like we got there. We're finished. We have more work to do, but we're on the right track. And if you compare that to Congress, nobody says Congress is a model for anything. They're borrowing 40 cents out of every 30 or 40 cents out of every dollar, and just pointing at each other and not getting anything done. So let's start the work that San Diego did in Washington. We actually can provide a good example for them.
So how do we fix Social Security?
Well, Social Security actually is a less of a problem than Medicare, which I would maybe just address that first. We have to save Medicare. Medicare is the line in many cases between a decent retirement and poverty, because the biggest cause of personal bankruptcies, as you would say, Richard would know, Richard, is the inability to pay your medical bills.
Yeah, 2/3 of bankruptcies are due
right.
to that.
Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, I don't think the answer is what Mr. Bilbray did, which was to vote for the Ryan budget, which the Wall Street Journal said would end Medicare as we know it, send people out with a certain amount of money, hope that that's enough for them to get the care they need. We need to provide that guarantee, but we have to get a hold of costs. So things like negotiating down the cost of prescription drugs, ending overbilling, taking advantage of efficiencies in medicine through electronic record keeping, wireless medicine, and then over time shifting our system from being a sick care system that rewards doctors for visits and for procedures to a healthcare system that really incentivizes prevention. That's how we're going to save a lot of money and save Medicare for those people who've paid into it.
Yeah, and innovation can play a part there because the system is so mired in paper. It's so 1950.
Right.
And then getting back to the pension, no one could have anticipated. I mean, the city and I think the county each both have about a $2 billion deficit. Is that still an accurate figure as far as their pension goes?
And most of the city's issue has been investment.
Right.
Investment performance.
No one could have anticipated the market taking a crash like it did, although they got these high-flying securities and instruments that went south, and still a problem. I read an article. Now, Scott, here's something for you to tackle. Derivatives market out there globally is now valued at 20 times world GDP. We're talking $1,200 trillion, $1.2 quadrillion out there. And Richard, you could address this too, perhaps. This apparently is an opaque market. To me, that is scary. That means like any given day, with that much money at risk, something could happen and could cause a real catastrophe. Am I overstating the case? Or
you might be overstating the case because those are grotesque estimates.
I've read that.
Yeah.
And then this whole LIBOR scandal.
I think the LIBOR scandal is even scarier because it shows what manipulation can do to a market.
Right, and that's $360 trillion I've seen. So, right. We'll talk more at the break, I guess. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Muccio and congressional candidate, former city council member, and Port Commissioner Scott Peters. Welcome back, everybody.
Thanks, Joe. Hey, I wanted to ask one question that's sort of a change in topics because San Diego is the largest community of veterans in the country, and I know there's been some talk about privatizing veterans' benefits. What is your position on that, Scott?
Well, I'm a little bit nervous about always nervous about privatizing benefits. If we had privatized Social Security in the previous decade, we'd have lost 40% of our money. I will say, though, that one of the things that I know is that we're losing more warriors to suicide now than we are to battle. We bring these kids home, and we are not taking care of them. I think that ought to be a priority for us, and particularly in San Diego, but in Congress, to take care of those people who go overseas to make that sacrifice for us. Mr. Bilbray, one of my criticisms of him is that he voted against the $20 million for suicide prevention for returning veterans. And out of a $700 billion defense budget, we ought to be able to find that money.
Yeah, they just had a recent bill that, is that the one you're talking about, where the Republicans blocked the bill that increased benefits for veterans? Is that the one
That was a separate bill, Joe. That was separate.
There
was a separate bill for $20 million of funding for
suicide prevention. That's
unforgivable.
Therapy for suicide prevention.
A good thing. But Bill, tell us about Bill Clinton. You're going to be meeting him when?
Tuesday, President Clinton is endorsing me and four other candidates up in Irvine. So we're going to travel up there. I'd be happy to get that. He's really... he was really someone I think we look back on as someone who did a great job of leading our country, and I'd be proud to have his support. Also, Sandra Fluck, who's the woman, the advocate for contraception that Rush Limbaugh took on, is going to be endorsed me on Wednesday. So we're having some good news this week.
I can't believe we're wasting time even talking about that, given all the issues that face the country. But I always promise that I'm not going to be political on the show, but that one really irks me.
When people are hurting, we're fighting these 30-year-old battles.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see. I did want to get into the stadium a little bit with you because obviously that's a recurring issue. Uh-huh. And
hey, the Chargers didn't lose this week.
That's right.
Oh, sorry.
They were on the road. on a road trip to Julian getting apple pie or something. I don't know. But anyway, Scott, obviously you've looked at this issue. Do you know, obviously the financials are probably not there right now to build down at the port, but let's say miraculously there were. What would happen with the current site? I keep asking that question. And
well, Mayor Sanders has the has recommended a site, the bus yard site across from Petco Park, which I think is a good site for a stadium. And I was one of the, I think, I count as one of my major achievements, the building of Petco Park and all the development around there, which has generated more in tax revenue for us than the bond payments it's cost us. And mm-hmm. obviously a great downtown that's terrific to visit even when the team is not doing that well. Mm-hmm.
they had a good second half.
But there. They, you know, I think they have a lot of promise. The Qualcomm site is 166 acres. It's basically a parking lot that's right. used 10 times a year, plus a couple car sales and some tractor pulls. We could do a lot better with that land.
We'll talk about the gas plume under there too.
And as an environmental lawyer, that's not the most complicated pollutant to deal with. There's a lot of petroleum contamination. There seems to be funding for that. The cleanup's underway, and that's going to be valuable land, I think, to develop. And so I think one of the things we'd like to do is enhance our parkland along the riverfront. So part of that land should certainly be dedicated to parks. And should help Mission Valley's park deficit as well. Mm-hmm. But if you did 30 or 40 acres, that's a lot more land to take advantage of. Yeah. And could be, as you said, an extension of the San Diego State or something like that.
I heard the mayor mention that. They might put housing in some other...
We could ask him on November 18th when he comes on our show.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned it. What a great segue. We are going to have the mayor on here for his exit interview.
Excellent.
For November 18th. And
he's looking more and more relaxed, I'll tell
I'm
you that.
Telling
I would
you.
Imagine. Good for him.
Yeah. You know, the guy lost, what did he lose, 60, 80 pounds? You
yeah,
got
100, 100 pounds.
Yeah,
100
I think pounds. Yeah, I think he hit 100. Yeah,
you know, that's inspiring in and of itself. So. Mm-hmm.
So, Scott, off the wall question. You've got the future of your country sitting to your right. That's my 16-year-old daughter, Demi, not to suggest that you might not be the future of the country, uh-huh. but she's a lot younger than you. What would you tell a 16-year-old high school junior or a group of 16-year-old high school juniors about the future of this country and how they should get active or participate in the U.S.?
Well, you know, first of all, I want kids to be informed. I think, you know, one of the challenges we have is that it seems like only the older folks among us are voting. And the younger ones aren't. And if you want to know why people don't talk more about education, it's because they respond to who votes. And if we could get kids engaged in politics, which is easy to do now through Facebook, Twitter, everything, all the avenues that you have available to you, I think we could have a real impact on the kind of discussion we have about
our
future.
They were pretty active in 2008. You're saying they may not be as active this time around? Or, you know, I'm talking the 18 to 30 crowd.
Let me ask my daughter Demi a question. Demi, what percent of...
But she can't vote yet.
She knows this. What percent of young adults don't vote in this country? You know this, don't you?
26.2
don't vote.
So 76% do?
That's 73%.
74%?
Yeah.
Well, that's right. You're the numbers guy. Right?
Yeah, I was going to say, Joe.
I mean, 75%.
Well, Joe's taking his shoes off and counting his toes right
I'm
now.
I'm rounding.
The point is, that's more than one out of every four. So I guess my question is, Scott, why does there seem to be some apathy among young people?
Well, you might ask your daughter that one, but I would just say that people pay attention to who votes. And, you know, one of the reasons we talk about two important issues, which we talk more about, prescription drugs, or we talk more about education. Mm-hmm. We talk more about those issues that are of concern to people who vote. And that is the bottom line, I think. Get kids involved, get them interested. It doesn't take very much time to vote and mm-hmm. To participate, and it's easier now than it ever was.
But, so when you get elected, you'll come out and speak at Demi School?
I always love speaking to schools. Super. If they have me. I spoke at Canyon Crest before, and...
Are they in your district still?
They are, absolutely. Okay. The
still
district
are?
Goes from,
what is
from
your district?
Poway. Yeah, it goes down from Poway to Coronado. So this has got to be one of the most beautiful districts physically in the whole country. But it's got, you go from Poway and Ranch Bernardo and Penasquitos along Highway 56 with all those great canyons. Mm-hmm. You go along Highway 52 from Tierra Santa, Claremont, University City, La Jolla, and then down the coast, La Jolla, Pacific Beach, Mission Beach, Ocean Beach, Point Loma. Downtown, wow. A great downtown, and Coronado. So I mean,
wow. It's the Paradise District.
My God, you got the jewel. You got the plum. Hey, Scott, thank you so much for
being
with us.
Thanks for coming on. Very much appreciate it.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thanks for having
Demi,
me.
Demi, you have a great week at school. Richard, you have a great week presenting all week long. We're going to have the mayor on here November 18th. And you stay tuned and have a great week. And let's hope we get a little sunshine. Good night, everybody. Have a great week. See you next week.
Shopping for term life insurance? Well, I'm Joel Clark, a SelectQuote agent, with some good news. Now you can learn your best rates from ING, Transamerica, Banner Life, and many other highly rated term life insurance companies with just one phone call. That's right. At SelectQuote, one call shops them all. Give us a few minutes, and you could save hundreds of dollars. For example, a man 35 years old, in excellent health, can get a 10-year, $500,000 policy through SelectQuote for under $17 a month. Give us just one call and see how affordable term life insurance can be for you.
Call 1-800-900-1743. 1-800-900-1743. 1-800-900-1743. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors.
We follow the story.
I'm the president, and I'm always responsible.
Then we lead the conversation.
If you're to elect President Obama, you know what you're going to get.
Follow the leader. 760 KFM.